When I awoke on my first full day in Manhattan, I took my time in getting out of bed. The pressure to start my mission was ever in my mind, but I found no reason to rush it. I needed a little time to settle in before starting, to establish my roots and create a secure base for myself. After all, you can't devote yourself to a higher calling if you're struggling to pay the bills. Besides, I had spent years planning my escape from Salamanca. What harm would one more day of leisure do? Seeking to start the day on a high note, I dressed and went in search of a leisurely breakfast, finding it a few blocks away at a nice little cafe that served the most delicious burritos. Eating them reminded me of Dad's concoctions back home. No, I reminded myself. That was Salamanca. My home was here now, wherever and whatever I chose to make it. Finishing breakfast, I embarked on the next stage of my plan, exploring Manhattan and seeing everything it had to offer. I could have gotten around all of Manhattan in a day if I wanted to, but only if I went at a fast run, which was detrimental to actually stopping and enjoying the sights. So, instead of relying on hoof power, I took the subway, buying an all-day pass, specifically choosing a route that circled the entire island. As the subway made its way around the city, my face was constantly pressed against the windows, looking out to all the buildings, plazas, and parks. From the elevated tracks, I watched as thousands of ponies worked about, a colored stream that didn't stop, and the streets were not only the place to spot ponies, for entire swarms of Pegasus ponies flew through the air, heading to and fro from buildings, and becoming and going as they pleased. They didn't need subways to get around. There had been only one building I wanted to find, and as we passed the midpoint of the island, I was surprised to catch a glimpse of my ultimate destination. Manhattan's library was the oldest building in the city, and acted as its heart, for the library was the spot where Manhattan had been established hundreds of years ago by those who sought to turn the island into a paradise of learning and culture. While the culture aspect had thrived, universities and higher education in general had migrated mainland, mostly going to Canterlot, and the library was the only thing that remained, acting as the island's sole repository of pony knowledge and wisdom. I got a twinge of anticipation, looking the library over, for this was where my mission would begin. Yet, when the subway came to a stop before its gates, I didn't get off. I wasn't ready to go within its halls and study the manuscripts within. Oh, there was nothing stopping me, of course. You don't need to know three sets of magical passwords or join a secret fraternity to get inside. I wanted to wait until I could devote my full attention to studying once I was settled in. The time simply wasn't right for me to go in yet. The subway started off again, and I watched the library get swallowed up by the skyscrapers. Soon, I thought. Soon. I eventually got off the subway at the eastern end of the island, wanting to take a look at some of the larger districts, both for my own personal pleasure, and to mark out any potential places of employment. Getting off the subway, I was greeted by a sign informing me that I was now at the most eastern point of Equestria's territory. Beyond lay the sea and the land of the Griffins. Aside from the momentary amusement of the claim that I was the sole pony standing at the very edge of the map, it didn't interest me as I made my way into the city's entertainment district, filled with theatres, both films and stage performances, art galleries, arcades filled with all the latest in electronic entertainment, and even an amusement park that took up a huge pier that stretched out into the sea. I could have spent my entire day lost among the distractions and amusements the entertainment district had to offer, but I managed to restrain myself and stay only an hour. I could always return here when I needed to relax and unwind, but I still had much to see and explore. I continued on to the business district next. There wasn't much for the tourists to see, but for a job seeker, it was practically a smorgasbord of opportunity. All of Equestria's major corporations are situated there, nestled among one another with their high-rises all filled with studios desks and those working their way up the corporate ladders. Walking among the towers and eyeing the maps, I took stock of what companies would have the most pressing need for my services. All good corporations need press releases, after all, or internal memos, or prepared speeches for the company meetings. I could have gone into the towers right then and there and put my application and business cards, but chose not to. One, I still wanted to survey Manhattan further, and two, I didn't have the proper attire. But as it turned out, that wouldn't be too much of a problem. For situated only a short walk from the business district was a shopping district. If the library was the cultural heart of Manhattan, then the shopping district was the lifeblood that kept it afloat, the economic heart, so to speak. Here were crammed all manner of goods that any pony could ever wish for. Clothes, toys, electronics, food, books, vehicles, potions, all of it vying for my attention and, more importantly, my wallet. I didn't intend to stay long, but the sheer volume of colors, ads, and display windows had been strategically positioned to ensnare the eyes, and I found myself caught up in following them along, eager to see what each store had to offer. Caught up in the wonders of the shops and consumer goods, I sampled a little bit of everything. I partook in food kiosks with small samples of cheese and crackers, looked over numerous vehicles available for those who wanted them, mostly the rich who didn't quite fancy walking, and even browsed the toy stores, finding that today's little colts and fillies had electronic gizmos for cooler and high-tech than anything I had ever played with. Where I had simple wooden dragons to act out my daydreams, they had plastic dragons with electronic roars and miniature pony knights that screamed, "Will you accept my friendship?" when you pressed a button. But of all the shops I visited, the ones that struck me out the most were the clothing stores. Within their walls, I found a near infinite variety of things to try on. Suits, jackets, ties, and pants, anything and everything from business attire to casual was available for me, from gala dresses that glittered with diamonds embedded in the fabric to trench coats the color of the darkest night, made from fake leather, of course, who on Celestia's green earth would wear the skin of a fellow sentient. I didn't buy anything, but I certainly had plenty to think about, especially what I would wear when my job hunt started. Time flew by, and before I knew it, night was falling. My planned exploration of Manhattan had gotten cut short on account of my own wandering attention, and from being taken in at all the stores. I chided myself upon boarding the subway, and headed to my apartment, located in the northwestern part of the island. But any anger I had towards myself for losing track of time was gone as the streetlights came on, blanketing the sidewalks with a golden light. I was so intrigued with the sight that I got off the subway early and walked the rest of the way to my apartment, relishing the chance to observe Manhattan's nightlife. It was much busier than Salamanca, for sure. Nightclubs, outdoor cafes, and even a few ice skating rinks for those who came from the colder climates up north and missed the comfort of home. With all the lights and all the activity, it was almost sensory overload. I was tempted to enter some of those clubs and bars and to take in as much as I wanted, to join with the crowds and see how the city folk defined fun. However, I ultimately decided against it. I was still a good pony of Celestia's day, and relished being able to get a full night's sleep. Besides, I needed to get enough rest to begin the search for employment. There was no sleeping in on the third day of my new life. When the sun rose on the horizon, I was already awake, my hoof hitting the alarm button on my clock. Breakfast was a quick affair, and I was off, heading back to the shopping district, having pondered what attire I would need for my job hunt. There were many styles I could have chosen to wear for my job hunt, but I wanted something that would make me stand out, to give the impression of power and importance, of a pony who had the whole world at his doorstep. Unfortunately, buying such an outfit would have taken every last bit I had, driving me into bankruptcy. Because I had no desire to be a homeless pony, I purchased a standard black suit, along with a blue tie. Simple, but effective. It wasn't as flashy as Forks, snakeskin, or fine silk, but for now it would do. Having dressed as a pony who was important, it was now time to play the part. My search for employment began by returning to the business district and visiting corporations one after another, inquiring about their writer and speech needs. When they inquired about my skills and resume, all I had to do was point out my cutie mark and assure them that my gift was that of the silver tongue. Would serve them well. It should have been quite a simple affair, with quick results and a new job to come in the morning. But it wasn't. All of the secretaries and managers in the charge of hiring me told me, one after another, that they already had a pony on staff to handle speeches and press releases, and that, sadly, my services weren't needed. The first time it happened, I wasn't upset. Such a thing was to be expected. Not every corporation or business had its openings, to be sure, but on the fifth try, I was getting anxious. By the end of the day, I was a near nervous wreck, as not one single corporation was hiring. My skill, the one thing I was so good at, simply wasn't needed. Doing my best to stay calm, I changed tactics and used my gift of the silver tongue to subtly influence the secretaries and managers I spoke to, charming them, and subtly edging my way into their good graces. Looking back, I wondered to myself about the morality of such an act, but I remember thinking that not only would it prove to them that I was good, but it would also help me get a job, and that's what mattered. But despite my best efforts, my charms couldn't get me into the hallowed halls of employment. Either they weren't hiring, or they had just hired someone else, and all they could do was keep my information on hand, should anything come up. When I got back to my apartment that night, it was as if a foggy haze had enveloped me. My gift of the silver tongue, it should have been easy to find employment. Instead, all I had gotten was rejections. The second day of my job search started with a bit more desperation. Once again, I dressed to my best and went through the city, going to other places that could possibly use a speechwriter. After all, you didn't need to be a huge corporation to need someone on staff to handle your speech-related needs. But, as it turned out, nobody did. My searching was as futile as before, and things had fallen into a disturbing pattern of businesses either not hiring or having just hired someone before I showed up. And so it was for the next few days, as I made my way across the city, going to any place I could think of, even places that had morally questionable business practices that I normally would never have considered. And yet, all of it was the same. There were no jobs, and no need for my services. I turned my charm on everyone I met, but not even the sweetest words could stand before the harsh economic realities. I just wasn't needed. A week into the job hunt, and I was desperate. I'd covered the island, and there wasn't a single job to be found in my chosen field. With the prospect of my bits running out and being homeless, I had to abandon my hopes of a cozy office and professional business cards and go to an employment agency. When interviewed by the pony on duty, I told him about my skill sets and everything I was good at, making sure to turn on the charm once more, hoping I'd be in high enough in his graces to get something good. He ended up getting me a job at a grocery store, stocking shelves and cleaning up at closing time. Whoopee! It was a job, yes, but the last one I wanted. The first few days I went through the motions of my new job. While on the outside I was smiles and efficiency, on the inside I was burning up with the flames of anger and disappointment. My dreams of getting away from home and forging a new life for myself had led me to a dead-end job that utilized none of the skills and talents that I possessed. Instead of wowing CEOs and moving the masses to tears with the power of words, I put stuff away, swept up dirt or whatever mess had been created on aisle 5. But after those first few days had passed, I tried a new tactic. I told myself that it was just a job. It paid, and I kept telling myself that it was the money that mattered, not how I got it, as long as it wasn't illegally obtained. And on the long run, even the money would become insignificant. It was the means to an end. I just needed to remain focused on my true goal. Throughout the months that followed, that knowledge kept me focused on the big picture. Still, it was a daily grind to put on my apron and stock shelves, doing work far below what I was capable of doing. But only for now, I kept telling myself. Only for now. I was biding my time. The months passed. I continued working, getting whatever hours I could. Though my disgust at being a worker in the bottom rung of jobs was great, I needed the income, and worked day in and day out, going longer and harder than any of the other workers in the store, taking overtime, then double time, and on the rare occasion I could get it, triple time. Yet through it all, my work began to pay off. With each paycheck I got, my bank account slowly began to build. Whatever I didn't spend on rent and food went into savings. I lived a bare-bones life, buying no decorations, no entertainment, and nothing to bring color to my apartment. Every spare bit I earned went into the bank, adding towards my greater goal. But it wasn't enough. Not yet. I kept working. Day after day, each day was putting me one step closer to my mission. The holidays came and went. I sent cards and letters home, explaining to my parents that I was too busy to work to come and visit them, but I would manage that next year. To try and ease the pain of them not seeing their only child, I took photographs of myself at some of Manhattan's famous landmarks, inside my apartment, anywhere to show them that I was making it on my own. The seasons passed. Snow blanketed Manhattan, and I went to work in thick coats. Then the snow melted, and spring came. The seasons passed. Snow blanketed Manhattan, and I went to work in thick coats. Then the snow melted, and spring came, with the blooming of all the trees, and Manhattan's biggest park came alive with brilliant colors. My hard work at the grocery store netted me a raise. The boss praised my diligence and hard work, and I nodded like the good little worker I was. I could have cared less about how well the store was doing, or how pretty the floors were. All that mattered were the checks. I had enough to pay the rent and buy food. I was slowly closing in on my goal. Then, at long last, a year and a half after arriving in Manhattan, the day finally came. I got my largest paycheck ever, the result in getting a raise for my diligence and hard work. And as those bits were put into the bank, I looked at my statement over and smiled. I finally had enough money to cover all my expenses for at least a year, should the need arise. The time had finally arrived. I was ready to start my mission. It began on a cloudy day where the rain came down hard as if determined to drench all of Manhattan and perhaps persuade all the ponies to remain indoors, lest they want to face nature showing off how strong and persistent it could be. But on that day, not even nature itself could stop me. Dressing in my thickest coat, I ventured onto the streets and was instantly drenched in the downpour. Yet, despite waiting for this day for so long, I was in no hurry. I felt strangely calm as I got onto the subway. I pondered my emotions as I rode towards the library. What could cause such calmness? Perhaps I was walking down a path that had been determined for me. By whom or what I could not guess, but the thought gave me comfort. If I was meant to walk this path, then perhaps my dreams were also meant to come true. I arrived an hour later, the only rider on the subway, and I disembarked, the only pony seemingly brave enough to enter the library on such a cold and overcast day. I didn't mind. In fact, the thought pleased me, all the better to pursue my dream in peace. The halls of the library were quiet and solemn as I entered. Candles and lamps cast a deep, warm glow upon the marble walls. Unseen fireplaces burnt and crackled, filling the building with warmth. Perfect counter to the cold outside. Passing the front desk, I turned on the charm and inquired where I could find books on magic. The head librarian, well used to such questions, pointed me towards the western wing. I smiled and thanked her. It was smart to make a good first impression, for if I needed access to any restricted knowledge, it would be most useful to be on good terms with the pony who held the key. I had read about the magic section of the Manhattan Library, and how it was the largest depository of magical knowledge in Equestria, suppressed only by the magical archives of Canterlot, but they were more dedicated to scholarly knowledge and critical study. Mainhattan's branch was more suited to the everyday needs of unicorns, and I believed it the moment I set hoof inside the halls. They were massive, taking up full 3 stories and stretching on seemingly without end. The unicorns studying at the library that day must have wondered why on earth Pony would be so giddy at seeing so many books on subjects he could never use. I ignored them, and leapt right into the shelves, going down aisle after aisle, eager to get a feel of the place. Any and all magical subjects were covered here, from spells and charms to using your magic in everyday life. Need to spice up your love life? There's magic for that. To potions and brews that any pony could create. To my surprise, there was even a section dedicated to the study of understanding earth pony magic. I ignored those, figuring them to be little more than philosophers, struggling to come up with anything that's to suggest that we were special or unique. And, as I found out later, that was mostly true. One book even theorized that the reason we grew food so well is that our fertilizer was stronger than the other ponies. Charms, potion, earth pony magic, it was unicorn paradise. But I cared not for none of those things. I was only interested in 2 things. Books on magic in general, and books on alicorns. And while I found them quickly enough, the hard part was deciding which ones to check out. Ultimately, I chose 3 of each, as that's all I could fill my saddlebags with. I could have read them at the library, along with the others, but chose not to. I needed solitude for my studies, to be in a place where I had complete privacy. Checking the books out, I left the library and headed home, but not before making a stop at a small craft store I had discovered during my walks. To mark the beginning of my mission, I wanted to get a little token, something to commemorate the beginning of a long journey. Walking among the shelves, I pondered at the little statues and figures I saw, looking for something that felt right. No ordinary trinket or cheap tourist toy would do. I needed something better, something that could stand the test of time and embody my desires and dreams, to remind me why I had chosen this path in the first place. But I had no idea what I was looking for, as none of the things I saw called out to me. They didn't have the special spark I was looking for, the extra little something that made them special. Eventually, after going through the entire store, I reluctantly accepted that I wouldn't find anything on the shelves, or at least anything that was right for me. Yet, even as I moved to leave, something compelled me to take one last search for the store. So I went to the back to start my search again. And then I saw it. It was on the back of the shelf, half hidden behind a snow globe of Manhattan. Pushing it aside, I gazed into Princess Celestia's eyes, or rather, the eyes upon a tiny statue of her. It wasn't very big, no larger than the size of my hoof. A charm was embedded within it, for the statue floated above its stand, wings occasionally flapping, and her long mane and tail flowing behind her like banners in a breeze. But her expression, it was the expression that caught me. Celestia is revered by all ponies, and that filters down into the tributes we make with her likeness. Whoever built this little statue had the same adoration of our leader, for Celestia's expression was captured perfectly. It was warm and welcoming, and her lovely smile seemed to offer friendship, as corny as it sounds. As I looked into her little face, I couldn't help but feel as if she was actually there, looking at me in miniature form, in a face that was over 1,000 years of knowledge and wisdom, and she was offering it to me, if I wished. And for a few moments, it was as if I was a little colt again, eagerly rushing to the window and watching the morning sky, knowing that somewhere, Celestia was raising the sun just for me. That Celestia was before me, the one I once revered and adored. The pain we bear in our childhood is often the greatest of our lives, and the hardest to let go. The princess had let me down before, and from that day forth I had lost interest in her. Yet something compelled me to look at the statue and see beyond my disappointment. I looked for a long time. 10 bits later, and Princess Celestia was riding inside my saddlebags on the subway back home. It was just her and me upon the subway, and no one bothered me as I got off the train and headed back into my apartment. Doors were closed, candles were lit, and the books were spread out on the desk. I put little Celestia on a shelf above the desk, so as to remind me why I was doing this. Because even though she had disappointed me before, she was still the one who inspired me to begin my mission. With Celestia watching me, I began to read and discover how I could become an alicorn like her.